Okay, welcome back. Here we are. We've reached that point that we've been waiting for, the great Agadah and Masechet Ta'anit of Choni HaMa'agel. This is Jeff Sachs from Web Yeshiva and Beit Knesset Mishkan Sipora in Efrat. The Gemara had been discussing this idea of what happens if you have too much rain. You know, until now we've been worried about too little rain. And all of the ta'aniyot and prayers and sounding the alarms and other things that are done when there's not enough rain. But it could happen that you could get too much rain. And too much rain is as bad as too little rain. But the Gemara had mentioned the idea that you don't daven for rov tuva or rov bracha. There are certain things that are objectively bad. A band of, marauding bandits or wolves. There's no such thing as a little bit of good cancer. There's no such thing as a little bit of good wolves attacking you, right? Even the smallest amount you don't want. And kal vachomer, you don't want excess. But there are certain things that you want in the proper measure. You know, rain follows a kind of bell curve, right? Too little is no good, too much is no good. You want, the Goldilocks effect. Just right. Not too hot, not too cold, not too hard, not too soft, not too big, not too little. Exactly the right amount of rain. But the Gemara has an idea that things that are only subjectively bad, rain itself is inherently good, but too much rain is subjectively not good. For those things, you don't daven to stop, because it looks like you're not appreciative of the inherent value of rain in the right amount. So picking up from that, the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we're at the bottom of Kaf Bet Omid Bet, the very, very bottom of Kaf Bet Omid Bet, Tanu Rabbanan v'natati gishmechem bi'itam. I'll give your rain at the right time, or at the right season. Lo shikora v'lo tzme'a. So what does it mean, I'll give rain at the right time? Mean like I'll give it the right amount. I'll time it so that it comes down in the right amount. Not the land won't be drunk, and neither will it be thirsty. You remember Purim? It was just the other day. How soon you forget. You remember Purim? I mean, I know that some of you were drunk. I have eyewitness testimony. Right? So what kind of rain do you want? You don't want so much rain that the land gets drunk, gets saturated with water, and you also don't want it to be dry and parched. Oh, here's Ben. He must be logging in late because he's still hungover from Purim. We're talking about people that get drunk. Wild, crazy drinkers. He's definitely one of those guys. Ella, Benonit, you want just the right amount of rain. Shekoz man shag shamim merubin, that when the rain is too much, mitashtashin et haaretz, the land gets all, I don't know what's the right word, worn out. It gets like smeared. It gets all muddy. And, if there's too much water absorbed, defaced, right? We know what litashtesh means. It means to blur things out. But it means that the land gets all muddied up. So that things can't grow in it. And then the earth can't give forth its fruit. Davar acher, another interpretation of what natati gishmechem biitam means at the top of Kaf Gimel Omid Aleph biitam. Belele Reviot uvelele Shabbatot. On what most Meforshim say means on Tuesday night and on Friday night. Lele Reviot means the night going into Yom Revi'i. There's a kind of minority opinion that this has to do with Yom Revi'i, but the Revi'ah, the time of rain. But according to most Meforshim, we're talking about Wednesday nights and Saturday and Friday nights. Why Friday night? Because Friday night everybody's home. They had their chicken soup. They had their challah. They fell asleep. Nobody's going out on Friday night. So if it rains on Friday night, nishkafelech, it's good rain. It's gishmechem bi'itam. It's the best time for rain. We want it to rain, but, you know, we don't want to get wet. Like, it would be perfect if it only rained as much as we need, but not when it's going to interfere with our plans. But if I have to, you know, be like outside, you know, if I have to be doing something, so that's a problem. If I'm running in the marathon this Friday, who's running in the marathon on Friday? Nobody? Shame on you. I thought you were all men of good health. David, aren't you going to like walk 40 kilometers for the marathon instead?
In preparation, but not on the, you know.
So I did it once. That's enough for me.
You did a whole marathon?
No, I did 10K.
Okay, but anyway, if you're doing a 10K, you don't want it to be raining, right? But it's okay if you come home Friday after the marathon and it's pouring rain. You get home from shul, right? This happened the other week. What happened to, what was it last week? It was like pouring rain Friday night, like all during davening. And, but there was, it happened like 2-3 weeks ago. Like as we were walking into the house, it started drizzling. And then it really started coming down. I said, that's the Gemara. That's the Gemara that it rains on Friday night. I mean, when you don't have to go out, that's a bracha. Why Wednesday night? Why Yom Revi'i? Meaning tonight, right now, is it should be raining. What?
It's the halfway point of the week, really.
Oh, the halfway point of the week? Maybe. Maybe. But, so there's an idea, the Gemara...
Maybe it shouldn't rain on the people coming to your shir.
Maybe it shouldn't rain on the... No, but in other words, it should be raining. We should all be walking to shul and walking home from... In non-corona times, we'd all be getting wet coming to the shir on Tuesday night.
But now we're on Zoom, so it's okay.
So now it's okay. Or maybe it means like it'll start raining, just like Friday night it waits for the Yidden to get home from shul after davening. They'll wait for us to get home after the shir on Tuesday night. There's an idea in the Gemara that Tuesday night, the night leading into Yom Revi'i, is a kind of night that's ripe for the Shadim to get you. You know, people that are believers in those types of things before the Rambam got rid of them. You know, the Rambam kind of paskined the Shadim out of existence. But before the Rambam got to the Shadim, so people used to believe in Shadim, and there was an idea that there were certain Shadim that were particularly would go out on Tuesday nights. Maybe they were going to the Sniff, they were going to B'nai Akiva or to Ezra, and therefore people at a certain period did not go out frequently on Tuesday nights. People stayed at home on Tuesday nights, and therefore it was a good night for it to rain since people were in doubt anyway. That's one interpretation of why it's better for it to rain on that night, because fewer people get wet, and therefore it's bitum. Well, Tzvi, what were you saying?
I was just asking if the shadim told by the Rambam.
Do they listen to him when they pass? Have you seen any shadim? I have not.
Let's not go there.
Okay. Shekein matzinu b'mei Shimon ben Shetach sheyardu lehem gshamim b'leilei Revi'ot v'leilei Shabbatot ad shenasu chitim kechlayot v'se'orim kegargarei zeitim v'adashim kedinarei zahav. In the days of Shimon ben Shetach, it used to rain. They were a meritorious generation, and they used to get the rain at the right time, in the right amount. And it was so much rain that the wheat, the grains of wheat, grew as big as kidneys, and the grains of barley grew as big as olive pits, and the lentils were as big as gold coins, as dinars. And what they do with these miraculous, you know, it was like the county fair, you know, and they bring like the giant cow, and they bring the giant pumpkin, you know, and they those contests who can grow the biggest squash in Kansas, and they bring it to the county fair. So they took all of these gigantic, enormous samples of produce, which were grown thanks to the rain that fell in his day, v'tzaru mehem dugma l'dorot, and they set them aside as a kind of exemplar to all of the future generations, the Hodia Kama Hachet Gorim, so that the future generations should know the consequence of sin. In the future generations, when the wheat and the barley and the lentils don't grow don't grow quite as large, they'll know that it's on account of the fact they're not as meritorious as that previous generation. Shemar, Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Avanotechem, Hitu Eile, your sins caused all these things to be turned away. V'chatotechem Manu Hatov Mikem. And your sins, your evildoing, has caused, has prevented all the goodness to reach you. V'chein matzinu b'mei hordus, shehayu oskim b'vinyan Beit HaMikdash. In when they were building the Beit HaMikdash, or they were expanding the Beit HaMikdash, in the days of Herod, v'hayu yordim gshamim. Hold on, you see where we are? V'hayu yordim gshamim b'leilei b'laila l'machar nashva haruach v'nitpazru ha'avim v'zarcha ha'chama. While they were building the Beit HaMikdash, they didn't lose any work days to rain. You know, like if you're doing a construction and it's very bad weather, so the workers can't come out and work outside, you know, to build. But it would only rain at night during those days of working on the Beit HaMikdash. And in the morning, the sun would come out and it would dry up all the rain, and the itsy bitty workers were able to go out and build the Beit HaMikdash again. V'yatzu ha'am l'mlachtan. They were able to go out to work. V'yedu shemelechet shamayim bidehem. And they knew that they were doing God's work. God's work was in their hands. And now we get to Maaseh Sheshalchu L'Choni HaMa'agel. The story of Choni is told in the Mishnah. The Mishnah in our Perek tells the story of Choni, and then it's repeated slightly differently in the Brisa. I'm not going to read through the Mishnah because the essential details are in the Brisa. Of course, as you might imagine, there are some that do a very careful comparison of the version of the story in the Mishnah versus the story in the Brita. But I'm not gonna do that now. But you can look. It's here. It's the Mishnah at the end of the third parak of Ta'anit. But here, let's read it from the Brita. Tanu Rabbanan. They got to this point in the year, the end of Adar, right? Exactly where we are now. V'lo yardu gshamim, and it had not yet rained, which means it's a very serious situation. I mean, it's quite surprising that it's still raining. It's unseasonably, even though not only is it the end of Adar, it's the end of Adar Bet, and it's pretty cold out. Right? Aren't you surprised? I mean, yesterday was the first day of spring. It's really cold out.
I heard it's the coldest March in Israel in 100 years.
In 100 years. All right. So that's pretty cold. Even though we didn't get that much snow. Is Barry Lynn really seriously talking that we might get snow still? Somebody told me that Barry Lynn is talking snow. I think he talks a lot about snow.
Snow in July, so you
know.
You like
snow. Yeah. So Tanur Rabbanan, Pamachat Yatsu Rov Adar Velo Yardu Gshamim. So they got to this point in the year and it had not yet rained. Shalchu L'Choni HaMa'agel. So they send a message to Choni HaMa'agel. His name is Choni, and Ma'agel means the circle drawer. As we'll see, this is part of his ritual that he draws a circle and stands in the middle of it. As you might imagine, there are those that write about this and how this fits in with different magical practices that may or may not have been customary back in the day. But it's some kind of action that he takes in order to petition God. This Choni, the circle drawer. Hit palel v'yerdug shamim. So they sent him a message, Davin, and it should rain. Because Choni was known as some kind of miracle worker, some kind of wonder worker, that if he davened, it would rain. Why did they wait until the end of Adar? If they had this Choni, Choni's like, you know, their ace in the hole. He's their secret weapon in their arsenal. So why did they wait until Adar? Why didn't they ask him if all Choni has to do is daven, it's going to rain, why didn't they ask him in Shvat? Right? In Tevet? In Kislev? Right? Why do they not just keep him on a retainer to always daven so that it should rain. So apparently, Choni is the guy you go to only in an emergency. Shalchu l'choni hitpalel v'yadug shamim. Hitpalel v'lo yadug shamim. He davened and it didn't work. Ag uga. He drew a circle on the ground. He took a stick and he, in the dirt. V'amad betocho, and he stands in the circle. K'derech shasa chabaku kanavi, shne'emar al mishmarti moda ve'et yatsev al matzor. Chabakuk does a similar thing, where he kind of makes a declaration that he's going to stand on the mishmeret, he's going to stand watch, and he's going to et yatsev al matzor, he's going to stand up in his fortress, and he says he's not going to look out, he's not going to do anything, he's not going to, he says, I will, he'll stand there on watch, and he won't leave until Hashem answers him. So whatever that was, he made some kind of, he locked himself up in this matzor, in this little fortress, like imagine it like the pillbox, you know, on Derech Hebron. That Habakkuk makes a similar type of entreaty to God, where he kind of gives an ultimatum. He says, I'm not going to leave here. You know, it's like the old flagpole sitters or something. Amar lefanav ribono shel olam. So Choni says to God, Master of the world, banecha samu pneihem alai. Your children have turned to me. She'ani keven bayit lefanecha. I am like a member of your household, ani ben bayit. I'm you and I have an intimate relationship, and therefore you should listen to me. So, how do you understand that? What does it mean that Choni calls himself a ben bayit lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Translate that into some kind of term that we can understand.
He was on a first-name basis with him?
Meaning they had a very close, intimate relationship. Meaning, like, I'm almost like you could translate it as saying, like, you know, I'm almost like your own son. Right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what it means. Or maybe it means to be like a ben bayit is like to be like a ben meshek. Meaning I'm like a servant. You know, like servants are also b'nai, they're part of the household, but they're not children of the master. But somehow it leads to a certain kind of intimacy that even, you know, like imagine like the king, right? The king has sarim, but the sarim can't come and go as they please. I mean, we read about that last week, right? You stand outside the chatzer. You wait for Ahasuerus to call you. You enter the throne room. You approach the king. Right? Now, if you're a tsar, you have a lot of power. You presumably have a lot of influence. You have the king's ear, but not intimately so. However, Ahasuerus probably had a valet. You know, somebody that helped him put on his shoes in the morning. You know, like in the Megillah, Ahasuerus always wears those like Aladdin shoes with like the pointy toes that go up. So there was a servant. Maybe he was a slave. But whoever he was, he did not have the power that Haman had. But he had a lot of... He was a ben bayit. He had access to the king in a way that even the viceroy doesn't have. You know, like in all of those British... in all those British period dramas of the days of old, you know, like Downton Abbey and those things, if you've watched them, there's always those scenes where either the mistress of the house or the master of the house are in their dressing room, and the valet or the lady's maid are helping them get dressed or undressed. You know, like you look at those costumes. You couldn't dress. The reason you needed a servant was because it was so complicated to get in and out of that clothing. You couldn't do it yourself. You needed someone to fasten you up in that corset or to do up your hair or to put your jewelry on or whatever it is. So there's always a scene in those movies or those TV shows where the maid is there, it's after dinner, and she's helping the lady, you know, get out of her dress or get into her nightgown or take off her makeup, take off her jewelry, put on her jewelry. And there's like a moment of like real intimacy, and it's almost like, you know, you wonder like, are they crossing a threshold? But like the mistress of the house and her lady's maid shared a rather intimate relationship, and they shared secrets and gossip and other things. And there's always a scene where, you know, like the master of the house will walk in on this, and then the lady's maid will quickly shush up, and she'll grab, you know, the clothing, and she'll rush out of the room. So maybe that's what Ben Bayit means, right? That he's like a servant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and has that kind of intimate relationship, and presumably can whisper into his ear, well, you know, my lord, maybe you could make it rain. So there's two ways to understand what it means that Choni is a Ben Bayit and has this kind of influence. So he says, I'm a Ben Bayit. Shani kiven bayit lefanecha, nishba ani b'shimcha, hagadol she'eini zaz mikan ad she'tirachem al banecha. I vow that I will not leave this circle I have drawn until you have mercy on your children. Meaning he's like really putting it to God. He's saying, you know, either deliver the goods or I'm not leaving here. Hitchilu gshamim minatfim. It starts to drizzle. Amru lo talmidav, Rabbi, re'inucha velo namut. Right? So the talmidim say to him, right? Okay, we see you can do this. I mean, Rashi explains, we see you can do this, but we still don't want to die. Meaning a drizzle isn't enough. Drizzle alone is not going to save us. Kim dumin anu she'eng shamim yodim ela lahatir shvuatecha. Right? It looks like God is making it drizzle to get you off the hook. You made an oath, you made a vow that you wouldn't leave the circle until it rained. It rained, so now technically you're off the hook. You can leave your circle that you've imprisoned yourself in, but this is not enough rain to solve our problem. Amar lo kach shalti. So Choni turns back to God and says, this isn't what I asked for. Don't play games with me. Ela gishmei borot shichinu me'arot. I want enough rain to fill up all of the reservoirs. Yardu bezaf. So it really starts to rain furiously. Ad shekol tipa v'tipa kemelo pichavit. Each drop of rain was as big as the opening of a barrel. V'shi'aru chachamim she'ein tipa pchuta milog. And they measured it and they saw that each drop of rain was as big as a log. You know, like a kiddush cup is a revius, right? So it's like four kiddush cups worth of rain was one drop. Amru lo talmidav, Rabbi, veinucha. Okay, we see you can do this. Velo namut. But now, like, you have to make it that we're not going to die because it's too much rain. Kim duminanu she'eng shamim yordim ela la'abed olam. It looks like this rain is going to cause the whole wide world to expire. It's like the Mabul. It's like Noach. Amar lefanav lo kach shalti. So you see the literary parallelism here. He says to him, hold on, let me find that. Lo kach shalti. He says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this isn't what I, don't play games with me. This is not what I asked for. Ela gishmei ratzon brachal medaveh. I didn't want little bitty rain, and I didn't want rain that's going to destroy the world. I wanted nice rain full of blessing and kindness and ratzon, God's favor. Yardu ketikunan, and then it rained properly. It rained the way it's supposed to. Ad she'alu kol ha'am lahar habayit mipnei hagshamim. Until people started going up to Har HaBayit because of the rain. Well, in other words, if they had to go up to Har, meaning they had to take high ground. So if they had to take high ground, what did that mean? That all of their houses down in the lower city were flooding? So maybe, but then it's not Ketikunam. Maybe it means they went up to Har HaBayit because they understood that their prayers had been answered. And when your prayers are answered, you go to Har HaBayit, you go up to Beit HaMikdash, you bring Korbanot. Amru lo, Rabbi, kishem shet palalta sheyirdu, kachet palel v'yelchu lehem. Okay, so you daven that should rain, now you have to daven that it's going to stop. So here's the problem. And this is why this Agadah is located here in the halachic context that we had been seeing. Because he says, kach mekublani, she'en mitpalin al rov hatova. Except we have a tradition that we don't daven to stop something which is inherently good, even if it's too much good. Right? So that's the problem that we had before. Right? That I can't make it stop. It's like, I mean, it's a trope that appears in different folklore. You know, like the Midas touch. Right? Or, isn't there some folk tale about like a barrel that produces wine and it just keeps producing so much wine that everybody in the village has to come, you know, with their empty barrel. They have so much wine that they can't do anything. Or is it oil? Isn't there like some folk tale like that? That not a Jewish folk tale, like a European folk tale that they, you know, they have this magic barrel that produces wine, and it's so much that it overflows. So people start bringing their you know, their empty vessels to fill up the wine, and there's enough wine for everybody to have, you know, arba kosot, you know, 10 times over. But at a certain point, every vessel in town is filled up with wine. It's so much bracha. Well, there's a problem though, because, you know, you need empty vessels for other things. Where are you going to cook your food? You can't live on wine alone. Is anybody awake? Are you, hello? Yes? Right? Does this trope sound familiar to you?
Just not familiar with that particular story. Oh.
It sounds like something that should be a story.
I'm pretty sure it is. If not, I made it up, but I'm pretty sure it is.
But even if you made it up, you got
your car. Afa pichein heviu lo par hoda'a. So even though he can't daven to stop the rain, they bring him a bull that he's going to offer as a korban todah. Heviu lo par hoda'a. Samach shtei yadav alav, he does smicha on the par, and he says, v'amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, amcho Yisrael shotzeta mimitzrayim, einan yecholin lo berov tuva velo berov puranut. Ka'asta lehem, einan yecholim la'amod. Hishpata lehem tova, einan yechala la'amod. Your Jewish people that you brought out from Egypt. So you know, Jews, they can't manage with too much good, and they can't manage without enough good. They can't manage with too much blessing, and they can't manage with too much punishment. You were angry at them, meaning obviously they interpret that the drought that had preceded this whole story was obviously understood as being a sign of God's displeasure with them. And an yechol ma'amot hishpata aleihem tova yehi ratzon milfanecha sheyifseku agshamim v'yehi revach ba'olam. So may it be your will that the rain stops, and that there should be a little revach, a little breathing room, a little relief for the world. Miyad nashva haruach v'nitpazer ha'avim. The wind comes and dries up all the rain and blows away the wind, blows away the clouds. V'zorcha chama v'yatsu ha'am l'sadev he'evu lehem k'mehinu fitriot. And what happens after the rain? The mushrooms come after the rain, and they go out and they, you know, I don't know, whatever you do with mushrooms. You make soup. You fry them in butter. It's delicious.
Smoke.
What? And that's the story of the miracle wrought by Choni HaMa'agel, but it is not the end of Choni's story. So Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach il malei Choni ata gozreni lecha nidui. Ah, Choni, if you weren't Choni, we'd put you in Cherem. We'd we'd excommunicate you. She'ilu shanim kishnei Eliyahu, shem maftechot kshamim biyado shel Eliyahu, lo nimtza shem shamayim mitchalel ayadecha. You can't put God in a corner. That's what did you do? You said, until you send rain, I'm not going to come out of my circle. So in the days of Eliyahu had, you remember Eliyahu had, I forget which parak it's in. Eliyahu had, said that there was going to be no rain as a punishment. It's almost as if Eliyahu calls down the drought as punishment to the Jewish people. So he says, what would have happened in a situation like that? Right? It's like a game of chicken. And as Shimon ben Shetach is saying, you have this power, but you don't always know how to use it properly. And in theory, it can be Mechal Shem Shamayim. What would have happened if Eliyahu had promised there was going to be no rain? And then you said, I'm not going to move until there is rain. So either Eliyahu is going to be proven false, or you're going to have to break your vow. And either way, Shem Shamayim Nitchael Yadecha. Right? In other words, you can't do this. Even if you have this power to force God's hand, you have to understand that it's potentially very, very, very dangerous. Avamaya Selecha. What am I going to do with you? Choni. She'ata mitchate lifnei hamakom ve'oseh lecha ritzonecha. You have a way of nudging God. And when you nudge him, he does what you want. You are a keven she'mitchate al aviv ve'oseh lo ritzono. You are a spoiled child who, whenever you yahak your father, he's going to do what you want. Va'omer lo abba holicheni lerechtzeni bechamin shetfeni betzonein tenli egozim shkedim afasakin rimonim. Abba, I want to go swimming. Take me to the lunar park. Abba, I want. We have to update the examples. There aren't too many things a kid is going to do these days for an egoz. I've tried it. I've tried to bribe my kids with a walnut, but it didn't go. It's what the Rambam says you should do. The same Rambam who got rid of the Shadim for us, but the Rambam didn't know there'd be inflation on what you could bribe your children with. Right? Try getting a kid to do anything for a walnut. It's not going to work. But, the kid is crazy. He says, I want to go swimming. I want candy. Right? And so the father gives it to him. V'alecha katuv omer yismach avicha v'imecha v'tagel yoladetecha. In Pasuk in Mishle, that your mother and father are happy, and the woman who gave birth to you will rejoice. Meaning, Choni, you have a special relationship. I don't like it. If I could, I'd get rid of it, but you have a special relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You are the spoiled child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're able to blackmail him, as it were. Tanu Rabbanan, Ma Shalchu Bnei Lishchat HaGazit L'Choni HaMa'agel. The Sanhedrin sends a message to Choni HaMa'agel. It's a pasuk. They send him a message, but the message is disguised as a pasuk from Iyov. The pasuk says, "V'tigzor Omer, v'yakam lach, v'al darchecha naga or." And then the Gemara unpacks the meaning of the pasuk in Iyov and how it's connected to Choni. V'tigzor Omer, ata gazarta milamata, b'kadosh baruch hu mikayem mamarecha milamala. You make the gzeirah through speech. Right? Meaning you spoke down here on earth and you caused God to act from above. Va'al darchecha noga or. And light shines on your path, on your way. Dor shehaya afel ha'arta betfilatecha. A generation which was cast in darkness was, light was brought to them through your prayer. Ki hishpilu v'tomar geva. That's the continuation of the pasuk, right? You hishpilu. They were shafel. They were brought down low. And you said, "Geva, lift up." Dor shehaya shafel higbahato betfilatecha. The generation which was down low, you lifted them up with your tefila. V'shachenayim Yoshia, dor sheshach ba'avono hoshata betfilatecha. The generation which was, I guess, the generation which was, had stumbled. Or had bowed, would been bowed down with sin, you saved them through your prayer. Yemaleit I naki, dor shelo haya naki, milatato betfilatecha. A generation which was not clean, which was, I guess, polluted with sin, you rescued them with your prayer. Venimlat bevor kapecha. And they were saved through the cleanness of your hands, through the purity of your hands. Milatato b'masei adecha ha'brurin, right? You rescued them, that sinning generation, with the pure work of your hands. You know, this is the thank you note that he gets from the Sanhedrin. As Shimon ben Shetach is very ambivalent about Choni, but the Sanhedrin sends him today. We'd say they send him a bouquet of flowers, right, and a box of candy, right, and a gift certificate to Amazon. And this was their bracha for having saved the generation. Now the Gemara goes on with the perhaps more well known. I mean, it's hard to say, they're both well known. The more well known Agadah of Choni. Now this part of the Agadah is not connected to the story of rain. And either the Gemara brings it because once you're bringing one story of Choni, you bring the other story of Choni, or maybe really they serve as one unit. Omar Rabbi Yochanan Kol Yamav Shelotot Sadik Haya Mitzta'er Al Mikra Ze Shir Amalot Beshuv Hashem Et Shivat Zion Ayinu Kechomim. His whole life Choni was troubled by that pasuk that we know from Shir Hamalot, that when Hashem brings back the Shivat Zion, when God will bring us back after Churban Bayit Rishon, after Galut Bavel, we were like dreamers. So Galut Bavel lasted 70 years. So Amar Mi'ika Dinayim Shivin Shnin Bechelba. What? Right, so he says, what does it mean they were like dreamers? Like the whole time they were in Galut Bavel, they were like dreamers. I don't understand, he says. How could it be they were dreaming for 70 years? How could it be they were dreaming for 70 years? Could somebody be sleeping and dreaming for 70 years? In other words, apparently, Choni did not understand the metaphor. And it seems like he took it literally. But what does it mean? They were dreaming? They were sleeping for 70 years? Can't be.
Don't the words tell us that at the point of Shivat Zion, as we're being returned to Zion, at that point, we're like dreamers. We can't believe it. Must be a dream.
Right. Meaning you're giving the pshat. So Choni didn't get. In other words, it's a metaphor. Whatever it is, even to say like a dream doesn't mean like a dream like sleep, right? It means it's like fantastic. You know. If im tirtzu ein zu agada, right? It's not a dream. It's not a fantasy. It's fantastical. But Choni somehow is a hyper literalist, right? We were in galut, and coming back was like we were like dreamers. This means we were dreaming the whole time. What does it mean? The 70-year period is compared to a dream. So Yom Achad Hava Ozil Burcha, one day he's walking along. Chazei Lahahu Gavra de Havanata Choruva. He sees a guy planting a carob tree. It's such a well-known Agadah, but yet we'll read the words. Omar Le, Hai Ad Kama Shnin Toin. How long does it take to grow? Like, when will you get carobs out of this? Omar Le, Ad Shivin Shnin. can take up to 70 years. Omar le pshitalach de chayet shivin shnin? Is it so obvious that you're going to live another 70 years that you will live to bear, to benefit from this fruit? So Omar le hai gavra, alma, Omar le hai gavra, alma becharuva ashkachte, I found carobs here in the world when I got here. Ki hechi de shatli avahati shatli nami livai. So just like my forefathers planted carobs that I should have them, I am planting them for my children and grandchildren that they should have them. First of all, is it true that it takes carobs 70 years to grow? Carobs happen to be very, very, very long-lived trees. You know, trees of different lifespans, just like animals have different lifespans. Carobs happen to be very, very long trees, very long-lived trees. So it's not true that it takes 70 years for a carob to produce fruit, but it can take up to 7 years for a carob to bear fruit. So to get from 7 to 70 isn't such a stretch if you are making some kind of agadah, but it is true that there are certain carob trees that do only start producing fruit after 70 years. There are, as is true for many fruit trees, there are two types of, you know, there are male and female carob trees. One that gives fruit and the other that gives pollen, and they cross-pollinate, and that's how you get the carob trees. So it happens that a male carob tree, at a certain point late in life, can transition. It can start to self-identify as a female carob tree, and even swim in the Olympic races. In other words, something genetically happens in the tree in which it starts. Something happens in the hormones of the tree. Trees, you know, also have hormones, and a male carob tree, late in life, can start producing fruit, and that happens be'erech 60 or 70 years into the life of a male carob tree. So
it's not enough that it just feels like a female.
Yeah. So this idea that you can have a carob tree that will only start producing fruit 70 years later actually has some scientific basis. So the Gemara goes on, Yotiv kekarech rifta. So Choni is sitting there, maybe under the tree, and he's eating a sandwich. Atale shentanim, and he falls asleep. Ahadrale mishunita ikase me'enai, and somehow it's not like Rip Van Winkle where the banyan tree grows around him, right? But a kind of wall or a rock formation. Maybe you remember the last time we had a guy sitting eating a sandwich. What happened to him? Not long ago, a few dapim ago. Check it in your notes. Anyway, you have to start reviewing. We'll have the final exam soon. You remember the story of the Chachamim sitting under the wall eating their sandwich, and the wall is going to fall in on them. The Malach says, topple the wall on top of them, but there's some schut. So here we have another guy sitting near some kind of rock, and he's eating a sandwich. Maybe he's covered, you know, maybe that's what's happening. Like he's covered up like in this kind of cave where he gets a clunk on the head, which is going to knock him out for a while. But he has this kind of miraculous sleep for 70 years and he's hidden from sight. V'nim shivim shnin. And Rip Van Winkle, like, he sleeps for 70 years. Ki kam chazei lahahu gavra dehu kamalaket minayhu. When he wakes up, he sees the guy, what do you call that? Picking the carob. Omar le, atu dishatlite? Are you the one who just planted this tree? So Omar le, barbareyana? No, I'm his grandson. Omar le, shmamina dinami shivin shnin? Taka, what happened? I must have been asleep for the 70 years it took the tree to grow up. Chaza lechamra de it yelida le ramache ramache. And then he saw that the donkey that had been tied up nearby when he fell asleep, his donkey, had given birth to many, many herds of other donkeys. That time indeed had passed. So Azalabete, Omaluhu, Bre Dechonia Magel Mikayim. So he says, Is my son alive? Is the son of Choni Amagel still alive? Amru le bre leta. No, the son of Choni is gone. Ba bere ita. But his grandson is here. Omar lehu. Ana Choni Amagel. I'm Choni. Lo emnuhu. They didn't believe him. Ozu leveta midrash. This is a common trope in literature. Of the person who'd been missing, who comes back. I mean, it's in movies, in all types of things. Going back to Robinson Crusoe. There was that Tom Hanks movie a few years ago about the guy who was a castaway on an island. And he comes back to discover that on the presumption that he was dead, his wife had remarried and had children. And, Agnon, of course, uses this in more than one place, most particularly in Vayakov LeMishur.
I was thinking about the midrash about Moshe Rabbeinu coming back or not coming back, but sort of seeing, his
right.
Being talked about with Rabbi Kiva.
So Azal Aveta Midrash. Shmainhu l'rabanan de ka'omre nahirin shmatetin kivishnei choni amagel. He goes into the Beis Medrash and somebody had said something clever and they say, wow, that's as clever as the kind of stuff we used to hear in the days of choni amagel. De kichave ayel aveis medrasha kol kushya de havelu l'rabanan have mefarek luhu. There was no question too hard for choni amagel. Anything they would ask him, he would have the answer. Somalu, Ananiu, it's me, I'm Choni, I'm back. Velo imnu, but they didn't believe him. Velo avdi le yakara ikidimi boiluhu. And they did not show him the proper kavod. They did not show him the kavod that was deserving to him because they didn't believe that he was actually Choni. Chalash date. So he had chalisha sadas. He started to pass out. He was very disturbed. Boy Rachame, he davened umis, and he died. Omar Rava, Hainu Damre Inshe, Oi Chavruta, O Metuta. Give me Chavrusa or give me death. Now, but it's interesting because the Chavrusa that he's lacking here is not that O Chavruta, O Metuta means you need to have somebody to sit and learn Gemara with, right? That's how the expression is usually used. But that's not the context here. The context here is you need to have, to be a person out of time, right? To be a person disconnected. I mean, this in science fiction, you see very frequently, you see this in Star Trek rather frequently, the idea of time travel, that a person will find himself in the future. There's nothing more disorienting. To reach the future and to discover, right? You maniacs, you blew it all up. Right? Darn you all to heck, says at the end of the Planet of the Apes. Right? The idea that somehow, everyone you knew, the world you left behind is gone, and you are somehow plucked out of time and brought someplace else is extraordinarily disorienting. Right? The world looks topsy turvy to you. It doesn't make any sense. Right? I mean, this is true enough for people as they get older, the kind of stereotype of an older person looking around going, "Hey, I don't know what's going on here." Right? It doesn't make any sense. Everybody's rushing around. Right? We all, when we all get old, we're all gonna have to start speaking like old Yiddish men. It's, just built into the DNA. But that disorientation, it's the chavruta of society, right? I am not part of my society, right? And therefore, I don't belong here anymore. There's more to be said about this, and we'll come back to this next week, because now we have to make sense of what this Agadah is teaching us and how the two pieces relate to each other and how it fits in with both pieces. Choni is someone who wants results and he wants them right away. But and he's able to force God to do what he wants of God. But then he learns in a very hard way. He learns a lesson that takes a really long time to unfold. And the two stories are obviously saying something about that, and we'll come back to that next week.